Digital 410 Productions proudly presents the What's in Your Head podcast.
Digitized live from
your company name here.
Your studios in Cape Coral, Florida. It's the What's in Your Head podcast.
You guys ready?
No.
Yes, sir.
Boy, again, weren't you ready?
No, I'm ready. Go ahead.
See, Mike's got the red, I got the green, Morgan's like, yeah, whatever. Christmas nothing. I even got green and red.
I got green. I got OD.
What's up? OG5. It's the Christmas episode for 2025. Holy heck, guys. Gee willikers, I can't believe 2026 is around the corner. Can we just say that 2025 has been one turd of a year? I mean, it's just been painful. I'm so glad it's over. Just to give you a glance at my last 2 weeks. Today on the way home, I just picked up my cat that I had lovingly cremated after it passed away 2 weeks ago. And yesterday, I just dropped an inordinate sum of money on a whole brand new air conditioning unit because mine died. So things are, and I still got to do the water hookup. So still figuring that one out. But yeah, on top of everything else, 2025 has just been the doldrums. It's just been down in the dumps all year, and I'm just completely over it. I just can't handle it. I'll tell you what, it's just, I feel like Eeyore. You know what I mean? It's like, oh no. So hopefully next year, 2026, will be nice and sunny, and, you know, we can all just be happy, you know. What's the shiny happy people? Shiny happy people holding. Shiny happy. So what's up, Mike? What's going on, fella?
Oh, just another lovely day, I guess.
Mm-hmm.
It's been a while since we've been doing one of these,
things. The fine people at the lovely company that is Quantum, for whatever reason, you know, they had some issues with my internet connection. So I had no internet for like 7 days. And then when I got my internet back, I had the Monday, I think that Monday, which was WTSP day, I couldn't do. I had to go to a birthday party. And then Tuesday, I had to go to my niece's Christmas party. Christmas. We would call it a recital, but this was like a celebration.
Okay.
I have an observation I won't make because this isn't the episode for it. let's just say that when the hip hop version of Three Kings came on and there were certain individuals on stage, I was quite upset that they didn't get the opportunity to spit some bars because they should have. Let's just leave it that like that. Accusations could have been made by some people if they wanted to. But yeah, it was cute. It was cool. It was funny. They had like some big, it's at one of these new churches where they have like sound systems better than like half the nightclubs around here where like you go and see like Papa Roach play. I mean, this place has better PA systems and lighting rigs than most of the bars around here do, or clubs where bands play. The funny thing is they had like Christmas celebration and they had like ornaments bordering it and all that. But the funny thing is, like, the ornaments, every single one they had strategically laid for right off my tree. Even though I haven't had a tree up in 6 years, like I nudge Carrie's like, I think they have the same ornaments that we do. You know, some we bought at Lowe's like 5 years ago has real red, the gold. And some of them are kind of frosted. Some of them are kind of disco ballish looking, and some are just plain. And then we have these white and red giant jingle bells that we would hang on our kitchen cabinets, the white ones on the cabinets, and they had the red ones. It's like I think they robbed our broken our house and used our decorations for this background. But it was cool, and it was fun to see the little kids up there singing and all that.
So pause for half a second here. Say what those are called again?
Jingle bells?
No.
Ornaments?
You said ornaments.
I also say breakfast, but here we are.
I've never heard anybody say ornaments before.
Never been to Kentucky?
You said it twice in a row.
You ever seen a winder?
I've heard that before, but I've never heard ornaments. That's a new one.
I got an ornament right here. USS Arizona. But I haven't had a tree up in 6 years.
Have you heard that before, Morgan?
I don't hang it.
Ornaments?
Ornaments?
You got to get them ornaments.
Ornaments. They're made out of arms.
Anyway, continue.
But yeah, so we went and did that. And then I think something happened on Wednesday. No, Mike, you had like open house or something for your kid. So
yeah,
here we are.
Yeah.
So basically, long story short, folks, the reason we haven't had an episode in 2 weeks is week one, I had no internet. Week two, Mike had stuff to do and just we couldn't make it work on Thursday or Friday. So here we are.
The kid is going into high school next year.
Is that a good thing or a bad thing?
Wow.
Wow. No, it's a good thing because he's plugging along. And yeah, it's 4 more years. I mean, that's scary. You know.
My kid is graduating early, believe it or not. Don't ask me how. Technically her last day is Friday, and then she graduates in May. Because she goes to an alternative. Well, she goes to an all girl school. And with their curriculum, because they don't have homework, they have to go all year round. And so because they go all year round, you know, they'll have like 2 weeks off for their summer or whatever. And so they're kind of ahead on schedule. So she got her attendance done. She got the state required curriculum done, and which don't know how, but hey, whatever. And so Friday's her last day. She has a job now. And this is my second kid that I've graduated high school. So you think you're feeling old. Remember this guy over here. We already know he's old, so we won't even bring that up.
Yeah. I was going to say, his one of his kids is almost my age.
He has grandkids on, I think, don't you?
He does, I think. Yeah.
Oh yeah. No, yeah, number four is on the way.
Wow, congratulations, Pop.
Before we get into Christmas traditions, let's start at Christmas traditions. You know the nice thing about your kid turning 18?
What's that?
You're required to buy less stuff for him.
That's true.
Hey, you're 18. Guess what that does? That puts you in gift card territory.
Mm-hmm.
Because the gifts go to the grandchildren and the nieces and the nephews.
My niece is turning 18 Sunday.
Here's $50 to Amazon. Merry Christmas.
Not even that. She said, I just want cash. Because I'm getting my first tattoo and I want cash and that's it.
That's all right. Gift keeps on giving, Clark.
You got
all
it.
Year round. What was the word? Oh, speaking of the Jelly of the Month Club, if you guys don't get that reference, where have you been every year?
Yeah. Since 1984.
I don't know. I saw that movie in the theater.
You did?
Yeah, hold on.
That's my favorite Christmas movie.
Mine is Christmas Story.
That one used to be mine, but I kind of grew out of that one and I moved on to Lampoon's.
Funny thing, I saw one year I saw it, like you can tell I got Google up, my whole face just got 10 times brighter. 1989.
Oh.
So one year on Facebook, someone was selling Christmas Story lithographs. And my mom bought one and it's like, I don't know, 69 out of 100 or something. And I used to do computer work for a frame gallery, and so they framed it for me. So, and Mike, you've been to my house, so when you walk out this door, there's a wall, like a half wall, and on the other side is my kitchen cabinets. I have a big clock that I got from one of my clients. My whole house is outfitted in free shit, people. My whole house is outfitted in donated stuff, people. So I got this clock, and every year we have, our family tradition is the swapping of the clock. Which we haven't done this in 6 years either because we haven't been in the Christmas spirit around here. But anyhow, we used to take down the clock and hang up the Christmas Story lithograph. And then after Christmas, it would be the replacing of the clock. Yeah, so 1989, that movie came out in the theater. Gosh,
what was it, 89?
Golly gee, I had to have been like, I know it was in elementary school. I must have been like third grade. It's hard for me to remember because I did first grade twice because that's when my parents got divorced. And I lived in Kentucky for my first grade. And then when I moved to Ohio, I was so far behind because, believe it or not, it gets a bad rap, the whole no kid left behind thing. The whole purpose of that, and we've discussed this many times before, bad results come from good intentions. The whole root purpose of no kid left behind is the idea was all schools would have roughly the same curriculum for that age group so that people in my situation, whose parents get divorced In Kentucky, I went to 3 different elementary schools in first grade. And then when my dad got custody of me, we moved to Ohio. And then I went to first grade. Well, being in 4 different first grades in 1983, 2.5, No Children Left Behind was not a thing yet. I had no foundation. Every school is teaching different things. And so I ended up repeating the first grade. I got held back. So my timelines get a little weird when it comes to elementary school. Everything in my mind revolves around first or second grade. Could have possibly been third grade. I don't remember. I just remember at the time, you know how young kids get fixated on a phrase like 6'7", 6'7", or whatever. At the time, yeah. My stepbrother was fixated with the word hemorrhoids. You guys know where this is coming. So for months, you know, he lived in Kentucky. He would come up. My stepmom had visitation. He would come up every other weekend and all that. In the summertime, he'd come up. But he was 3 years older than me, so I kind of looked up to him as the cool one. You know, that he wasn't my biological brother that I saw all the time, so he's even cooler. He was in a Fangora magazine and all that stuff, and he was in the Anthrax and all that back in the day. And he was super smart kid. He ended up skipping, like, sixth grade. No, he skipped eighth grade, went from seventh right to freshman year. Nowadays, he writes computer programs. But anyhow, at the time, he was fascinated with the word hemorrhoids. That was his 6'7". He loved. And so we're in the theater. My parents weren't there because we had all siblings, and this will come in our Christmas tradition. So my dad had 3 kids. We're the Brady Bunch, right? There's 6 of us when we're all together. And so the thing always was, our parents would just give us money and drop us off the movie theaters. We could watch whatever we want. I remember, I think I saw Fletch by myself. There's a couple of movies I've seen by myself in the theater as in elementary school. If you can imagine that, walking into the theater and seeing like a fifth grader sitting there by himself eating, watching cartoons. I think I watched Who Framed Roger Rabbit by myself as well. But anyhow, so we're watching, and there's that scene where the aunts and the grandmas come over, and the woman who plays Raymond's mom on Everyone Loves Raymond says, there's a line where she's like, my hemorrhoids have been killing me. And Brad just, that it's the equivalent of somebody saying 6'7" in a cartoon now, the whole theater, whatever. He just started rolling on the ground laughing. So that's my memory of that. And nowadays, and it usually happens at Thanksgiving, but Carrie, that's Carrie's favorite Christmas movie, and that's her family's every Christmas movie. So every year at Thanksgiving, and we sit down for Christmas, somebody always inevitably says, is Rusty still in the Navy, Clark? Why is your house on fire, Clark?
So,
great. Say the blessing, Bethany. Say the blessing.
The blessing.
Yeah. So what we're going to get to real quick before we get into this, because I want to lead into Christmas, but the whole idea for this episode is to talk Christmas traditions. And so, since there's 3 of us, I thought one of us would give a tradition or something funny that happens, and before the other person interjects, I'm going to provide you guys a weird tradition from around the world. I got a top 10 list. We won't do all top 10, but I'll interject a weird tradition, and then someone else will go, and then when there's a break, I'll interject another weird tradition. So instead of doing a long list, we'll just interject traditions amongst our conversation about our family traditions. But before we get into that, can either one of you, Morgan, you should know this because you seem to be the person who actually has some religious value to them out of us two heathens. Why was Jesus born in a manger?
Have you ever asked this question?
Why? How did they end up in a barn?
Okay, Caesar Augustus was the Roman emperor at the time, and the Romans basically ruled what they considered to be the entire world, which was Asia, the Middle East, you know, that area. And the reason they had to go to Bethlehem was because they had to go where their family origin was for a census, basically, so they could, you know, be counted for taxes.
There's the operative. Did you know that, Mike? Jesus was a tax baby. The reason he was born in a farm, in a barn, in a feeding trough, was because the families were forced to travel 90 miles on horse and camelback to their hometowns for the census, not for population control, but so they can make sure that they collect tax. Could you imagine being born in a place and no matter where you live, you owe taxes to that town? You could never get away from maybe you're lucky and you're born in a small village with low taxes. Maybe you weren't. Unlike the United States, you can't move to a place that has a tax rate that's more conducive to your lifestyle. No, they had to travel 90 miles while his wife was 2 days away from giving
very
birth.
Very pregnant.
Yeah. They get there, all the inns, all the taverns, all the Airbnbs of the day were all filled up because everybody's traveling to pay their to do their census and to basically make their tax note eligible. And that's why he was born in a feeding trough in a manger, all because of taxes and government oversight. That's all you need to know about mankind and history.
Fantastic.
Yeah.
I didn't know that.
Yep. I actually asked, I said that to somebody I worked there, like, I never heard that. And she looked at me like I'm just being some weirdo. I'm like, no, it's literally verbatim. What Morgan just said is exactly what ChatGPT put. Oh, starting
well,
during the reign of, and I know it's in the Bible because there's Bible passage references here too, but a lot of people didn't realize.
Yeah, I mean, basically that's like, you know, most of the gospels, you know, refer to it, but I mean, that's basically, you know, the first passage in Luke is, you know, Luke 1 and 2 are all about, you know, Jesus being born, and it lays it out, you know, basically what ChatGPT and I said, you know, it lays it out pretty much word for word that that's, you know.
But that all gets washed all away about in the Snoopy Christmas shows and the aforementioned elementary school plays and all that stuff. All that stuff's washed out. We just assumed why?
Actually,
because it was back in the day and everybody lived in a barn. That's why. That's what we just assume, right? All of us uneducated masses who didn't read the Bible or go to church, we just assumed because that's the way it was. Moving on.
Well, I think too that things have been glorified, you know, and like
romanticized.
Yeah, I guess in a sense as well, you know, over 2,000 years,
2,500 years, yeah.
That
that don't happen. I mean, there's perfectly proof that we can't keep history straight for 2 weeks, let alone 2,000 years.
Right.
We don't even have back then they didn't have the luxury of audio recordings and widespread literacy where people could take judicious notes.
But I think that's why all of that, you know, might have fallen to the wayside. Because
apropos to nothing, I can't find any information on this. I looked, but and we know the media, not just news, but just media in general, people who produce content, even back in the 90s, sometimes they took liberty. But I specifically remember a show on History Channel called The History They Don't Teach Us in School. And I can't find this evidence. I would love to prove it right. But according to this show, the hypothesis, the reason Christopher Columbus found the United States, because they always told us he was looking for spices because the food was bland. Apparently, the Queen of Spain had a hankering for opium, but they were in disputes with Saudi Arabia or whatever it was at the time. And so the spices was actually opening up a new opium trade route. So basically he was a drug runner, but I can't find that paperwork anywhere.
We can
so
neither I'll confirm nor deny.
Back to the content at hand. Hi, Google. Morgan, this was your idea. So let's start off and let's go with, you know, it makes sense too, because you probably had like traditions of, you know, hoop and stick. So let's start with your old school ways of family tradition, and then we'll go to me, and then Mike can talk about his flying cars and his hologram Christmas trees.
Oh, yeah. Uh-huh.
My traditions growing up were all based around my grandmother on my dad's side. And because outside of her, you know, my family life was an absolute mess. My parents were divorced. My mom was schizophrenic. Yeah, we basically lived in chaos always. But we could always count on going to Nana's house, and she would have, you know, like the aluminum dish full of mixed nuts with the crackers, you know, and it looked like a great big oak leaf. They would be out on the coffee table in the living room, and
they loved their nuts. I remember my grandparents always had walnuts and they had the crumb walnut cracker.
Yeah.
Oh yeah.
None of it was shelled. This fancy life of buying pre-shelled nuts. No, it was like being eating a freaking oysters.
That was half the fun.
And crab.
That was half the fun.
Yeah, but we would, we'd open presents, have turkey, you know, the normal stuff. And then my in-laws actually are the ones that are very, very big on tradition. Actually, both of my in-laws, their parents came over on the boat from, they came over from on the boat from Sweden, did the whole Ellis Island thing, whatever. And, you know, they have the straw goats and the little Swedish Christmas trolls and all the stuff that they put out every year. And my father-in-law on Christmas Eve, before we open presents, would always read the Old Testament version of Luke 2. And we'd have Swedish meatballs.
Yeah, boy.
And have either of you ever heard of Lutefisk?
I've heard of Ludacris.
Well, this is probably... So Lutefisk is cod that's been soaked in lye, rinsed, soaked in lye again.
You got to rinse off the lye.
So basically that's done several times, and then it's frozen, mostly because in Sweden,
the refrigeration, you know, in the
winter, everything was frozen. So
no one had high cholesterol, all that salt. It was amazing.
But basically it's cod flavored jello, and it's pretty awful. But
I would
my in-laws actually would go to the Swedish club. It's called Sons of Norway.
Sorry, cod flavored jello looks like a dessert that would be featured on Ren and Stimpy. What do you want for dessert, Stimpy? I want cod flavored jello, you idiot.
But it's that was one of the traditions that I was introduced to shortly after marrying into the family. And at the time I was eating MREs and Army Chow, so
cod flavored jello was the lateral move.
Yeah, it wasn't right.
That wasn't
terrible.
In one of the MREs.
So, but you know, you put enough gravy on it and everything tastes fine.
I would rather have jello flavored cod myself, but who am I?
Wow, that's
so
yummy.
I can't help you with Sweden, but Norway's kind of close. Hiding the broom, Norway, or comes from the 1600s. The tradition comes from Norse folklore during the early modern period, when people believed witches and evil spirits were especially active on Christmas Eve. Brooms were hidden to prevent them from being stolen and used for flight, blending pagan beliefs with the Christmas holiday, or with the Christian holidays. So hiding of the broom. So as somebody who's been carrying a firearm for over 13 years daily, one of the biggest inconveniences is when you come home, you need to take your firearm off of yourself and put it somewhere safe, somewhere secure, especially if you have kids. Now, I know most of us are responsible. We have a gun safe somewhere, but let's be honest. Usually these gun safes are big, they're bulky, they're kind of out of the way because they're a bit of an eyesore. Your wife doesn't want them where everybody can see them. So sometimes they're in your closet behind some clothes, sometimes they're in the garage, sometimes they're in the mudroom. And let's be honest, taking your firearm out and walking to those locations to secure it is a pain in the butt, but you have to be a responsible firearm owner, especially if you have kids in the house. That's why you need to get yourself a Stop Box Pro portable gun safe. You can make it non-portable. You can drill some holes in it, mount it to a place of convenience in your house, but it requires no batteries and no electricity. You simply come in your house, walk up to your safe, choose your finger button combinations, open a safe, remove your firearm from your person, put it in the safe. If you close your safe, just that easy, it's secure. So do yourself a favor, head over to stopboxusa.com/D410 and get all the information today on your Stopbox Pro. When seconds count, trust the only non-fail firearm storage box, Stopbox Pro, at stopboxusa.com/D410. Anything else in particular you can think of? Did you ever get... So what tends to happen, right, when you're from divorced families or families who don't get together often, I can remember, I think the last time we had a quote-unquote family reunion was like 1982. I don't think our demographic, if you will, I'm trying to keep this show nice because we got an experiment going on here. I don't think our demographic really have family reunions in that per se. My last family reunion was in 1983. The last family reunion I ever went to was my roommates in 1996. I can't think of, and when I mean reunion, I don't mean getting together for Christmas. I mean like every single person from your bloodline gets together at like some park or some convention center or some rented out summer camp for the weekend. And like, this is your 15th cousin, Jim Bob. And he's, I'm from Holler. Here's my stick and my pheasant flavored pudding and stuff like that. sometimes the holidays brings every once in a while one of them out, or you bring that relative you only see on that holiday, and so now there's this obligation of gift giving where they want to provide you with a gift, but they don't know you from Adam. But did you ever get a rerun gift from relatively the same person every year because they just have to check you off the list and they don't know what to get you and they don't remember what they got you last year? Have you ever gotten a repeat gift year after year? And if so, what was it?
I did. When I was young, my aunt and uncle would always give me the Lifesavers book. Either of you familiar with that?
The candy?
Yeah, well,
like an advent calendar.
Yeah. Well, it looked like a book, mm-hmm. and you open it up, and it was like six or eight rolls of Lifesavers.
I complain about.
No, me either. But for like 7 or 8 years, that's what my aunt and uncle gave me. You know, until I was a teenager.
That's easy though, because it's candy, and anybody. I mean, you know, unless you were to go to them and be like, "Look, I love you, but I hate Lifesavers." Please,
you,
if you're gonna get me something, give me something else.
I had 7 teeth pulled last week. I'm not very good with candy.
Yeah, that would be the only situation. That would be the only situation where, like, money or like candy or something like
Save
that.
Save your repeat gift for when you talk. Tell yours, Mike. So I'm gonna go to me now, just on timeline. Very similar to Morgan. My parents got divorced when I was probably kindergarten, first grade, as we kind of talked about with my house surfing. But prior to that, we would all go to my grandmother's house. Same grandmother and grandfather, the ones I always talk about who served in the war, that their wedding photo is actually that white square right behind me with all my World War II stuff. And it was a magical time, Mike, because things were cheap. The average cost of a G.I. Joe was $3.25, and that was at the high end. And even though we were in a recession, but things were cheap and things were plentiful. And so when you have your grandparents, your aunts, and your uncles, and your parents all bringing their Christmas presents, even though these presents aren't just for you, they're for everybody, for all their kids, from Santa. You know, what we would do is our parents would bring some of the Santa gifts over, and then we'd have some back at home for ourselves. But what I'm getting at is we would walk down to my grandmother's basement, and from the corner of the basement for what seemed like hundreds of yards, it was probably 5 feet, but to an 8-year-old, it was just Christmas. It was a sea of Christmas presents because there's, you know, 15 grandkids and then their parents. And so just an immaculate sea of Christmas presents. You got the real tree. Remember the heat bubble lights, Morgan?
Oh yeah,
they still make these and they sell them on Amazon. I looked up them a couple years ago, but this is back when we had real Christmas trees I got real dry. So we had two things. We either had a basically not LED, what's the other
incandescent
miniature incandescent bulbs that got super hot with a coat of lead paint on them in different colors sitting right next to the tree that if your wife forgot to water it every 3 days, the whole thing's gonna bring her house down because you got these 130 degree light bulbs in a dead bush. And then they had ones where it was a base with the light in it. And then you had essentially kind of like a half of a thermometer minus the numbers with a colored liquid in it. And it would sit in there. So when it got up to about 115 degrees, the thing would start boiling, but it would boil different colors. They're called boil lights. They're literally, you're boiling water in a thermometer on your Christmas tree. And not just one. They were a strand. It was like boiler, regular boiler. So now not only do you have these super hot incandescent light bulbs that are miniature or the real big versions for the outside of your house, and when the wind smacks, they'd pop and electricity and fire. But anyhow, and so you literally were boiling water on your dead bush, hoping your house didn't burn down. And so you had, and you, there were those bulbs. It's going to sound funny, but like when you describe things now, like especially if you're kind of blind and then you get contacts or glasses, like, wow, shit's in HD. Even back then with those lights, even though with your real eyes, you look like you're watching some TV show from fucking 20 years ago. Sorry, did it again. It's a bad habit. My bad. From effing 20 years ago, everything's even in real life had a weird sterile color. So we would do that. Well, later on, my parents got divorced. Some of my other aunts and uncles got divorced. And then I had an aunt who was super duper religious at the time. And this is going to sound weird to modern day people with all of our troubles. But back in the day, something as simple as divorce could divide a family. You think finding out your kid was gay, there's people who treated their sister who got divorced the same way, like, oh, we can't get together because you're a sinner and you got divorced. And so not only did I have my parents who got divorced and my aunt got divorced, but then my aunt did come out of the closet. And so those days were gone. So now my poor grandparents had to schlep to each person's house and then go to there. And so my Christmas tradition was up in Ohio. We're going to up to Ohio. I live with my parents. I live with my dad and my stepmom during school year. And then during the summer, I got to live the lavish lifestyle, being on welfare and playing my aunt and her girlfriend euchre for food stamps because they weren't digital cards. They were actually currency. And so that was how me and my mom would supplement our income, was play euchre for food stamps. So back up in Ohio in middle class land, my stepbrothers and stepsisters would come up from Kentucky. So that means my parents would make that 2-hour drive, which is like driving to Tampa, no big deal. Back then, cars weren't as reliable, so it was a little bit more of a deal. They would bring my step siblings up. Christmas Eve, we would drive to Chillicothe, Ohio, which in the 70s wasn't the meth capital of the world. It was a quite nice place to live. My aunt and uncle taught there for 30 years. Nowadays, apparently, it's the meth capital of the world. But once again, this is the Christmas episode. We're not getting into that. So we'd go to Chillicothe, Ohio, have Christmas dinner with my aunts, uncles. We would do gift exchange. My parents would give their kids their gifts. My aunts and uncles would give us our gifts. Open it up, have a good time. Take the hour trip back up to Columbus, because Chillicothe is kind of west-ish, east-west-ish. We would open up our presents. So here it is, Christmas Eve, score, 2 Christmases. It's not even Christmas Day yet. We're doing good. So I already got Christmas presents from the aunt and the uncle, which my dad's other sister would come over. So I'm actually getting twice the presents. I'm getting presents from Aunt Donna, presents from Aunt Sharon, and vice versa. So score there, come home, get to play that stuff. And then because the step siblings were up there, we would have family Christmas at my dad's house. So time for Christmas number 2, ding, ding, ding. Let's have fun. Open up all those presents, go to bed, wake up at like 4 a.m, get loaded up in the family caravan, take that 2-hour trip down to Kentucky, where my seat was behind the bench seat in the back. I would literally lay between the door and the back seat in that area wide enough for some luggage. But I was so skinny as a kid. My dad thought I had malnutrition and my mom wasn't feeding me, that he took me to the doctor to make this to build evidence, but turns out I just had a fast metabolism. And so anyhow, I was small and I would sleep back there, but of course the speakers are right there. My parents are working 50 hours a week. They're trying to stay awake. They just already had two Christmases last night. Now it's 4 in the morning. I got to drive 4 hour round trip. So they're cranking 1980s, 1990s. I'm an Indian outlaw, half Cherokee and Choctaw, which is why I hate 90s country music, right? So I'm sleeping. I got those Infiniti 4x5s coming out of the Chrysler Caravan, the upgraded edition. And so we would take that schlep down there. They'd drop me off my mom's house. And then my poor grandparents, here's stop number three out of their four kids and all their grandkids, because we can't get together, heaven forbid. And so they drive down in the snowy ass weather and risking life and limb on these roads in the backwoods of the hollers of Kentucky that don't have salt trucks. And the roads are full of potholes on a good day, 2 feet from the Ohio River. So one, you're in a river swimming. And so they would make that schlep down there. And then we'd enjoy our Marlboro Christmas with, you know, Winston, my mom and her husband at that time were big Winston fans. So we'd enjoy our Winston Christmas and have our good presence there. And then I would stay there until Sunday. Then my parents would make that. My dad would drive back down to pick me up, take me back up there. So my dad and my stepmom are constantly doing 5-hour-a-day trips, turning burns in Kentucky to make sure that we could see our family members who couldn't be bothered to help out with a return trip. And so that was basically my Christmas every year until I was 16. And then at 16, once again, 2 hours isn't that far away if you think about it. There was plenty of days I was like, it's Friday. Fuck it. It's Friday. The heck with it. I'm going to drive to my mom's, and I wouldn't go home after school. I'd just drive, go hang out all weekend at my mom's house. But,
I mean, that's like from here to Tampa. So
yeah, pretty much. Really, but for some people, it was like driving from here to Maryland. Just, it was unfeasible. Couldn't be done. Hence my dad making the drive all the time, every other weekend, both ways. But anyhow. So one of the repeat gifts that I got, bless her heart, nicest woman in the world. It was my second stepdad's mom. I'm glad you did that. I didn't count my dad. My third stepdad's mom. There was four, technically five, but she married the same one. Anyhow. So my third stepdad's mom, she didn't know what to get a young 15-year-old high school kid. But one thing we all know about 15-year-old high school kids is they like to impress the ladies and they want to smell good. So every year for like 7 years, from like 10 to 16, I got the Brute Stuffing Stocker Christmas Extravaganza that included a bottle of Brute cologne, the Brute soap on the rope, and the Brute like aftershave. And so I was in a time when all my contemporaries were wearing Nautica CK1, you know, Tommy Hilfiger. Here comes Don rocking his 1979 Brute.
They never threw in a little bottle of Dracar Noir.
No, that was too high end. You weren't getting a bottle of Dracar Noir. You weren't getting a gift pad at Walgreens on Tuesday. And if you're real fancy, you got the Brute bottle that had the little, kind of had like the chain necklace with the nameplate that kind of chinked on the glass. Yeah. So for me, it was Brute. I was up to my ears in Brute. For my sisters, it was always, and to this day, I think the women suffer from this more. Every year, your wife from somebody's going to get some Yankee Candle Shop candles and a gift certificate to Victoria's Secret. Somebody in her family's getting those two gifts for Christmas every year, and they still have the candle, and they still have that gift card in the room from last year. But yeah, somebody this year is going to be getting that candle and the gift card. So I guess for us, we'll go America. Here's a weird American. I think there's an American one on here. I am not aware of this. I find this absolutely nonsense. I would believe that this started 2 years ago, but allegedly this thing started in the 1800s. I know you're in middle school in that time, Morgan, so I'll ask you. Do you know anything about the Christmas pickle?
I have heard of the Christmas pickle. I couldn't tell you the story behind it. Well,
what
yeah.
The Christmas pickle is.
I like I said, I couldn't tell you the origin story of it, but I'm sure that ChatGPT will help us.
Mike, do you know anything about the Christmas pickle?
I feel like I vaguely heard about it from like an older person in my family, but
I know more about the Festivus than I do the Christmas pickle. Apparently, this goes back to the 1800s, but this is the most American 1800s thing, because why are all American traditions traditions? It's based on one or two things, religion or capitalism. Often claimed to be German, the Christmas pickle is actually believed to have originated in the United States, possibly as a marketing idea by an ornament company. Did you hear that, Mike? An ornament company. The pickle symbolized luck and reward, and the first child to find it's receiving, the first person to find said pickle hidden in the tree. So I guess technically this is the precursor to Elf on a Shelf, the magic Christmas pickle. You would take, it kind of makes sense, right? Pickles are green. Your trees are green. It's going to be harder to find this thing. If it was like the Christmas canary, you nail it from across the room. So apparently you take this Christmas pickle ornament and you stash this son of a bitch in your tree. I guess if you're a real jerk, you'd put it at the top by the star where the little kids couldn't see it. But if you're a sporting fella, you'd put it somewhere in the middle. And the first child to discover the Christmas pickle would get the Christmas bonus gift. Let's be fair. If you're getting this utilitarian gift, it's probably going to be food or candy and nothing personalized because, well, after all, no one knows you found said pickle until Christmas morning. So what kind of a gift was it really? I don't know. It's a utilitarian extra gift. So that is the history of the Christmas a pickle. Mike, what was it like in the early 2000s when you're celebrating Christmas while listening to your emo and watching were you a brony? Was that what it's called? Were you a brony growing up?
Brony?
Yeah.
I don't even know what that is.
I became of this phrase when Haney got hooked up on it. A brony. Trying to stay clean here. We've got an experiment going on.
Yeah.
When I was a kid.
You've got a couple hits already.
When I was a kid, I had a couple of cartoons that came out. One of them was Back to the Marketing. He-Man was designed and marketed to kids, for boys. Barbie was marketed from the 1930s to girls. G.I. Joe actually originated World War II era, was the size of the original 12-inch Barbie dolls, but they were called dolls, and so it wasn't until the 80s when they were resized to 3 inches made of plastic and called action figures that the young boys actually picked them up and started playing with them. Well, this is quite fashionable, and after all, it is Christmas, so we need to keep pumping out toys. Got Mask, G.I. Joe, He-Man. So on the girl side, you got Rainbow Bright. You got Strawberry Shortcake. You got the Pound Puppies, which Pound Puppies are kind of unisex. Boys bought into them too, but they're bigger. Cabbage Patch Kids buy, absolutely. Monchi Cheese. My Little Pony. My Little Pony, My Little Pony.
Okay.
My Little Pony was originally issued and designed for girls, but they'd have the little boy one in there. So, if brother, you know, there's always the option for dad to hear, well, here's Steve the pony, right? Well, apparently, a precursor to where we are now in 2025, around 2013, it became socially acceptable for young lads to declare not only their not hatred for My Little Pony, but their undying love and fanaticism for them. So they refer to themselves as bronies, as in bro ponies. So that
actually,
was
like, it wasn't even kids. It was like full grown men.
It was like high school dudes and college kids, all right?
But when was what time frame was this?
2010, 2012, 2013, 2008. You know, it's one of those things where it's kind of like the word woke. It's around for a while before it gets mainstream pickup. Sure. So Morgan will tell you, but I'm saying it probably ended up on Wikipedia or Urban Dictionary around 2005.
Yeah, I've never heard of that. Never again, guys. I grew up in, I mean, I grew up here, but I also grew up in a small town in North Carolina where
They didn't put up with that nonsense.
Yeah, exactly.
You better buy them G.I. Joes, boy.
Cable TV at even at that time still only consisted of like 25 channels. So
Christmas in your time.
Christmas in my time.
It's a picture. I want to know about the tree. I want to know about the lights. I want to know about the quantity of gifts.
So
your parents smoked Camel Wides or Marlboro Ultralights?
Salem's.
Ooh, fancy. Mm.
Salem's. So when
you're
my
from
parents,
a menthol family?
Yeah. When my parents
a menthol family.
When my parents were actually together, before they separation.
That's when you really don't truly enjoy smoking. When you need menthol flavor, it's like you're really not enjoying that. You're not enjoying the sport of this.
That's what I smoked for 15 years.
Menthol. At my diehardest, I was a Camel Wide guy.
Yeah,
I was near the end. Last 10 years or so, I worked my way up to Camel Marlboro Lights and then a Marlboro Ultralight. But back in my prime, I was a Marlboro Red. Or a Camel Wide, or what was the other Camel that came out? Which, by the way, us talking about this, our experiment's completely blown.
The crushes.
I'll have to delete this whole cigarette talk out of the video version of this. But Camel Specials, I think it was, when they came out in the red and the yellow, like Egyptian, like mid-90s marketing pack. Camel Specials, where was that? Jeff's Kiss.
Did you ever smoke non-filters?
I still do. World War II events. You know how much of a pack of Lucky Strike non-filters go for at Publix right now?
Probably $8.
Son, a pack of Marlboro, a pack of LMM goes for $8. A pack of Lucky Strike non-filters are $18 a pack because A, no one smokes non-filters, and B, tobacco taxes are through the roof. And I actually had somebody say to me, not this year, but last year's VKE, he's like, aren't you? He's like, you have a YouTube channel, right? I was like, yeah. Thought he was going to talk about fishing or my World War II content. He's like, how are you sitting over there smoking when you run? Apparently, out of all my content, he watched the workout content. I'm like, first off, I never said that I'm a picture of health. But second of all, I don't smoke. I can go to a World War II event, burn through two packs of Lucky Strikes, drive home, and not pick up another one for another year or my next event. I can smoke all weekend long. And Mike's seen me do it too, where, you know, mm-hmm. for a while, you know, hey, we're going to fish. I'm going to get a pack of cigarettes and a beer. Mm-hmm. I'll smoke all in the kayak and not smoke until I get on. But I don't even do that anymore. Now it's just simply the World War II events. And to be honest with you, this year, VK, I didn't even buy a pack. Actually, no, I did. I couldn't find any Lucky Strikes, so I got a pack of Camels. And even they were like $15. It's ridiculous.
Non-filter.
Yeah. Ridiculous how expensive they are.
I didn't even know you could get non-filter cigarettes anymore.
A lot of guys will just buy the whatever and rip the filters off, but you know, it's the pulling out the pack. I have the AeroCorrect Zippo, and every time I do it, somebody in the audience or somebody in the civilian crowd, they're like, he's even got it down to the cigarettes and the lighter. Well, actually, when I did that event a few years back in the Alabama, where we flew in the Japanese reenactors, I got a pack of Lucky Strikes from Japan that has the Japanese writing on it. But we digress. We want to get back to the mid-2000s and Mike's family Christmas tradition.
Actually, from the traditional family Christmas, I think, was more pre my parents splitting up. Waking up, you know, your parents there, you know, my brother was there, my sister, couple times she was there, because none of my siblings are my full siblings and they all have other parents, you know. Anyway, and I remember you know, just the typical waking up Christmas morning with the whole, I mean, I've got pictures of some of them. I mean, the in 2000 I got my first go-kart. Ooh. And I have pictures of that Christmas morning. Huh? What'd you say?
Rich kid.
Yeah. No, my dad built my go-kart for me.
It don't matter. When you come from my train track, anything with an engine and wheels is considered rich. Yeah. Your parents could have found it on the curb and brought it home. But I'm like, look at this rich kid. He got a go-kart. Like my kid, my friend Danny always talk about, his dad's in the Marine Corps. He had the aircraft carrier. You know the one.
Ooh. Oh, yeah.
He had the GD, G.I. Joe full-size aircraft carrier, and all the, if you have the aircraft carrier, you've got the rest. Yeah. You don't just get one G.I. Joe in it. No, your parents have already bought the collection, and that's, he had it set up in his basement. That's all you need to know. He had
that. That's wild. But anyway, yeah, in 2000, I got my first go-kart. It was red, 5-horse Briggs and Stratton on the back. Him and my uncle built it in my uncle's garage, and it had a shiny
Cooney carburetor.
Beautiful, huh?
Cooney carburetor?
No. not on a utility motor. It had a nice red bow on it sitting behind my dad's truck in the driveway, and that was a that was actually one of the colder Christmases that I remember waking up, and it was like actually cold out. You know, we had to have sweaters on, and my mom had the heat on in the house. But we did the typical get-together, like Christmas Eve, I think, or maybe it was a couple days before or something like that with the family, where we'd get together and do the, you know, unwrappings and all that stuff. My traditional gift that I got
repeat
regularly every
gift.
Year.
Your repeat gift?
The repeat gift.
Mm-hmm.
My grandparents bought me, well, my grandfather bought me a Hess truck every year.
Yes, we discussed it. Yep.
Yeah. So that was my repeat gift, but it was on purpose. So, and I expected it every year. I got one up until a couple of years before my grandfather passed away. So, and I still have them all. They're in a tub in my garage.
Was your grandpa, was either one of your grandfathers? I just had this flashback, not to jump on your story, but it has to do with repeat gifts. It wasn't it only happened twice. But it was from my grandfather, my grandmother. Did any of you get the deer bone pocket knives? They may not be deer bone, but they had the outside of them look, had that bone texture and that bone
color. Oh, like a buck?
Yeah, like a buck.
Like a buck knife.
The kind of open, you know, multi-blade, not quite Swiss Army knife, but yeah, either a single
like
blade.
Like an antler? Like antler style
well,
kind of handle?
Yeah.
It wasn't a fixed blade knife. I actually have one uniform, but the sides of it had screwed on like antler or bone something.
Okay.
Yeah. That was
I got a Swiss Army knife.
Nice.
My first pocket knife my grandfather gave me it was the tiny one.
Mm-hmm.
And he gave it to me, and it was brand new in a blister pack, and he was like, "Here's your knife." I was like, "Oh, cool." First thing I did was open it and cut myself with it.
Well, that's because you didn't have my dad. My dad was sent to Sweden when he worked for Master Food to make cow can and M&Ms and all that.
Oh, yeah.
And when Mike came back, he got my brother, myself, and my stepbrother Swiss Army knives because he went to Sweden. And the first thing he does, he opened a blade and he literally shaved his arm. He's like, "These are not to be blanked with. These are sharp." And he like literally shaved his arm with one pass and said, "Here you go. Don't cut yourself."
See, and when I was coming up, I don't think that they were like the real Swiss Army knives anymore. I think
there was a bootleg market.
No,
for a while.
I mean, I think. Well, I mean,
Swiss Army
I think
knives and the Rambo survival knife were all.
But it was different though too. Yeah. You know, like you know from you know actual the actual thing. You know, from like the 60s, 70s, and 80s, and the time that you grew up, you know, is different from the stuff that I got when I grew up, even though it was called the same thing,
logo was just a little different.
It wasn't made the same, you know. Yeah. The toothpick that came out of the side of it was plastic. It wasn't metal or anything. Oh, was it always plastic? Okay.
It was a little heavier duty.
Yeah, no, this was
before they got worried about getting sued by people getting bleeding gums from it.
Right.
And the tweezers sucked.
Mine had it was real basic. It had a knife, mine didn't even have a corkscrew. Mine was so small, it didn't even have that. It had the little scissors, one decent blade.
Mm-hmm.
It had the small can opener on the one side, the toothpick on the side, and then I think it had a
flat head screwdriver.
That was also, I think, a combo for as a nail file on the little one.
Yeah.
So the tip of it was in a flathead screwdriver. I've had, you know, more authentic style ones, but nothing from back in the actual time that they were made really good. But anyway, when my parents separated and split and all that kind of stuff, I did the same thing that you did, which was the, go around and have 900 different Christmases every
That's the
season
best
and
part of being
whatnot.
a divorcee kid. Two Christmas at a
The
minimum, dude.
part that sucks about it now, as an adult,
Being the guy who
is
schleps around because the other person's not available to do it.
exactly. So as an adult, and I'm not complaining, I love my parents all collectively, but I've got, and now I'm married again because I was married before. I'm remarried and my wife's parents are divorced. So I've got two sets of parents that I have to go to. My wife has two sets of parents that she has to go to.
Then your kid has two sets of parents, and then you have to try to figure out when you could take
Right.
him to go to hers and
Right.
then still have time to go to his while you're over at the other ones. It's like
Right.
which one won't be upset that he's not there because he can't
Right.
beat all four of them.
Right. So the difference with that was is that when it came to my son, we made the agreement that we would switch off holidays every other year. So 1 year I would get Thanksgiving and she would get Christmas. And it's not like, it wasn't, weeks before we would see him or anything like that. It was only like, a couple days, which was fine.
Well, it's
And
also beneficial when you don't have 200 miles between the two of you, too.
right. So yeah, I kind of feel bad for him too, because it's like, not only does it suck for us because we have to drive around and we have to make all these plans. We were just talking about this a couple weeks ago, I think, because we were trying to figure out who takes Christmas Eve. Because not only does my parents do Christmas Eve, my father, my stepmom, but her father typically does Christmas Eve too. So now we gotta, it's a toss up to, we have to figure it out. This year it ended up working out, but
Do you what? Where are you at in your family? Are you a Christmas Eve, or is because you're like I know you have the multi, right? You go to your dad's. Do you do yours Christmas Eve at your house, and then go to your dad's at Christmas Eve, or do you wait till the morning, or because Sam's not
No.
there, your Christmas Eve?
So, well, with my dad having his health issues that he's had, last year we, like, our whole family on my dad's side, we went over that to his house, and we woke up all together Christmas morning and did the whole thing.
That's cool.
Yeah, which was really, it was really cool, because it was almost like being a kid again. You're at mom and dad's, and and then our kids were
But
also
you're the
waking
one
up at
making
the
the
same time.
noises when you sit up off the couch.
Yeah, exactly. Typically though, we do the morning thing. We'll do like one or two gifts. We might bring, I mean, I'll bring everybody else's stuff, and we'll do the Christmas Eve party. They get to open all the crap that, we got for them. But I make my son wait until the next morning to open up the stuff, with the exception of like one or two things.
What's up, guys? As you all know, I am a huge bass kayak fishing fan. I love to bass fish from my kayak. And so, if you're like me, when you first got into fishing, you started looking online for some bait casters, perhaps some spinning rods, spinning reels, and you got sticker shock. You could not believe how expensive this quality stuff is. And that's how I got turned on to Cass King. I started looking for high-end quality fishing equipment that people could afford. And that is Cass King's, that's their slug line, affordable fishing innovation. And they tell the truth. I enjoyed their fishing equipment so much that I went out and initiated contact with Cass King to become an ambassador. I have been an ambassador now for 2.5 years. I don't bring it up a lot. But hey, I just want to say to y'all, if you want to help support the show, you're looking for some quality fishing equipment, head over to d-410.com/fish. Click on the link, check out the Cass King gear. You'll be happy you did. I'll get a little bit of thank you from Cass King. You're supporting the show. We're all happy. Thank you so much. Now on to the show.
Maybe.
Morgan, how in your family with you as the father, how did you and your wife direct Christmas at your house?
Well, we would do Christmas Eve with the in-laws, and then we would do Christmas morning at home, and then we'd go back to the in-laws in the afternoon and do the roast and all that, type of stuff.
There were years where
But
we had scheduling issues, so instead of doing the trip to my mom's house on Christmas Day, in the morning, like maybe something came up. My dad said, "Hey, I'm driving there all the time. The kids aren't showing up at 8 in the morning. I'm dropping off at 6 p.m. at night because I want to sleep in on my day off." Okay, that's fine. In those cases, we did this thing where we'd still go to the aunts, but how our parents would placate us is they would allow us to open one gift on Christmas Eve, and then we could do the rest of gifts on Christmas morning. Have you guys ever done that in any of your families? Where you're just like, here's your early present. Leave me alone. I'll talk to you in the morning. We did that with Sariana and Katie both. It was, you know, me and Carrie just early on, it was open one Christmas present now, and we'll do the rest in the morning. Last 5 years, it's here's your crap. Merry Christmas.
Because, here's your gift card.
Well, no, it's not like that. It's just with the family dynamics, and everybody knows, you know, I adopted a daughter for whatever reason, and it makes sense. Holidays means family. That's when you want to start thinking about biological family. So every year around Halloween, things just blow up. And it's gotten to the point where not only do we, it's like we go through the motions, like here's your presents, check it off the list, but no Christmas trees, nothing, because it's hard to be cheery when you're like getting screamed at all day by your kid, right? So for like the last 5 years, we just, here, cool, Merry Christmas, but the whole wrapping stuff, we just don't do it.
Well, and that gets kind of lost, as you know, I want to say probably in the last couple of years, my son has started to kind of lose it.
Yeah, once they stop believing in Santa and nowadays Elf on the Shelf,
yeah,
it kind of gets to be more a friend's Christmas, really. I mean, at that point, you kind of start treating your kids like how you would do your buddies. Like, here's your stuff, man. Sit down and open it up. Right on, and let's go do our things. Unless, let's all sit around and watch. That's another question.
It's less about toys and stuff too, because now they want more expensive and you know, crazier things. And
what not family,
like, you can sit there and watch them play it. You know,
what family were you from, Morgan? Were you from the sit and have to watch each person open each present individually, or was it just a feeding frenzy? Everybody scream, "Look what I got!" And just. Blah, 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 blah.
Well, I would say early on, I would say early on when the kids were little, it was, you know, focusing on them, watching them open stuff.
But did the kids have to do it one at a time? Meaning if me and your wife were brothers, I open mine, you guys had to watch me. I think Aunt Nina for my Penn State sweater, even though I'm not a Penn fan state. And then we sit, which is fine when there's three. But when it's the cousins and there's like 15 people in that room, that gets to be that quick 10 gift exchange turns to be a 3-hour ordeal. What about you, Mike?
Yeah, as they got a little.
Go ahead.
Go ahead, Mike.
I've done it both ways. I've experienced it definitely both ways. I prefer the just get in there and get it done and over with.
Yeah,
I have since I was a kid and also as an adult, because ain't nobody got time to sit there until 11 o'clock in the morning, 12 o'clock, you know, noon, waiting on the last kids to open up their stuff, and they're just sitting there miserable because they're ready to play with all their stuff and we got to wait on these clowns.
And so, it's the parent's job to make sure that your kid thanks the appropriate person for their gift.
Yeah,
you shouldn't have to put them on the spot. Thanks, Steve. Thanks for the favorite colored hog hummus.
I think what we typically, we try to have some kind of organization. We did last year, that's for sure. And it was more of the, you know, everybody gets one, you know, or two. And then, you know, we go through that. And then, you know, somebody plays Santa, so to speak, and gets up and distributes.
Yeah, you have to have the distributor. Otherwise, right.
It's chaos. It's chaos.
Turns into the game of dodgeball. Everybody's just
right. That ball. Right. And especially with kids of, you know, various ages too, because it's like, no. Mm-hmm. You're not going to trample all over everybody else's stuff because you're being impatient. So
keep your booger fingers off my present, kid.
Yeah. So we have somebody do the, we have somebody do the Santa and distribute it out. And, you know, it's a couple at a time, and you open up your stuff and you know, all that stuff, and then a couple more, and you know, that I think that's a nice balance between being able to enjoy the experience but also kind of let's get it wrapped up, you know what I mean? So
if you had to guess a country excluding the United States that started a tradition in 1974 based around KFC chicken. What country would you choose, Morgan?
I am going to say Denmark.
Mr. Mike, if you had to choose a country excluding the United States that had a Christmas tradition since 1974 based directly around KFC, what country would you choose?
KFC?
KFC.
Since what year?
1974, 4 years prior to my majestic appearance on this planet.
Wow.
So what, 52 years ago? I'm 47, so yeah, 8, 9, 10, yeah, 40, 52, 53-ish years ago.
You were 78?
Yep.
78. Wow. Well, I don't think it's Sweden, because I think we already talked about Sweden. Dang, I don't know. You kind of hit the nail on the head on the Denmark one there. That's kind of what I would have thought first too.
Think of a country that is fixated on Western, not as in cowboys, but the West, Western pop culture.
Japan.
From music to movies to clothing. Japan. Think of a country just loves Western culture.
Russians love Western culture.
Right now they're going through their rockabilly phase. Japan.
Okay.
Yes.
Good job, Mike.
Loves American culture.
Yeah, they really do.
This tradition began, once again, because KFC is American as you can get, and one thing we're good at is religion and marketing.
Capitalism.
The tradition began as a marketing campaign called Kentucky for Christmas after KFC managers noticed that foreigners are missing the traditional Christmas meal. The campaign exploded in popularity because Christmas isn't a religious holiday in Japan. It's just them celebrating, once again, Western culture. So this became such a tie-in with Christmas in the last 50 years that families are pre-ordering their Christmas meals from KFC weeks in advance. So, like, right now, if you don't have your order in for your bucket of extra crispy chicken, your two sides of coleslaw and mashed taters, you ain't getting it on Christmas.
That is a Japanese Christmas tradition, huh?
So, speaking of food and traditions, Mike, did your family have any food-based traditions, or was it catch as catch can?
Again, younger years, more Italian dishes.
Interesting.
Just because I've always been called like a 57 Heinz. Like, you know, I've got lots of different, you know, backgrounds and whatnot, but we've always focused more on the Italian side of it because my great grandfather was on the boat.
Sure.
And so a lot of Christmas traditions, I mean, we did do, you know, a couple of years here and there where if we would go to somebody else's house to do the Christmas Eve or whatever, it would be like a more traditional, the ham and, you know, all that kind of stuff. But usually everybody was pretty accepting of the Italian dinner.
Which was
on holidays. It was anything. I mean, we would do everything from like baked ziti or, you know, lasagna or, you know, something like that. So, yeah.
Well, only reason I ask is because I learned through Carrie's family because her stepfather, who is New York Italian, he doesn't make spaghetti sauce. He calls it, they actually refer to it as chili, don't they?
Some refer to it as gravy.
Yeah, gravy. He makes gravy. Haven't done this in years, but before his mom passed away, it was the Italian seafood. Mm. It was seafood on Christmas Eve. It was the calamari, or calamari, if you will. It was the clams. The
clam strombolis or something like that.
All of it was seafood-based. And then on Christmas Day, you would do the traditional ham and mashed taters. But on Christmas Eve, it was always the most truest form of seafood feast.
Italian seafood, yeah.
Yeah, Italian seafood. That's what they would do. How about you, Morgan?
That's cool.
Well, growing up, it was always, you know, I think it was ham Christmas Eve, turkey Christmas Day.
Let's not forget about that cod flavored jello.
Yeah.
Well, that came later after I got married. And so with my in-laws, it was always Swedish meatballs on Christmas Eve with potatoes and peas and whatever else. And then my mother-in-law on Christmas Day makes the most amazing standing rib roast. It is just absolutely amazing. And she usually makes au gratin potatoes because I like those. So she's made those for me for a lot of years. But
such a taskmaster that even in death, that poor cow couldn't lay down.
Yep. Stand up.
Wow.
Yeah, I think by the time Christmas rolled around, we were all kind of turkeyed out. So we were a ham family. I love a spiraled ham. Spiraled ham, so good. We were a ham family. Yeah, so we would eat the ham at my aunt's house, and then my mom would do that. My mom would sometime would do a turkey. What, before we wrap it up, what traditions are you currently making, or Morgan, you made in the past for your kids that maybe didn't so much come from your family, but something that even to this day, something goofy that you still do on Christmas, even though your kids aren't around? What's something, whether it's you got to have a cheddar cheese ball covered in almonds, something good, you know, what's the one weird thing that you make sure that you acquire or do every year on Christmas, even if it's just you and your wife at home with the dog watching TV?
It's usually the big Costco tray of peppermint bark. That's the one thing that I picked up years ago that I discovered I liked. And so to the point where my kids will give it to me. Yeah, friends will buy it. And 1 year I had like five trays of it. It was ridiculously awesome. I could smell the diabetes coming.
Diabetes. What about you, Mike? What's a tradition that you and your wife are kind of creating, or something that one of you carried over, even if it's not technically a tradition, it's something that always happens around your house?
Well, my bringing my mother into this, my mother makes pumpkin rolls every year, and it's, you know, those like Swiss rolls or whatever.
Mm-hmm.
Same thing, yeah. But it's like a pumpkin pie rolled up into a Swiss roll with the filling.
Stop! You're killing me.
There, and she makes them homemade.
Off of the pumpkin spice Starbucks, and you're good to
and
go.
She rolls them things up. She makes about a couple of years ago. She made like a half a dozen, or probably even a closer to a dozen of them. And she makes them all in one day. And but that's been a tradition probably for the last couple of years. But something that my wife and I, more my wife, has kind of brought it into it because of the chaotic Christmases that I grew up having a lot of the times, with separated mm-hmm. parents and whatnot. But the pajama taking the family photo with the Christmas pajamas and all that. So we've been doing that every year the last probably, I think, 3 years now.
I think so. We did that like a year or two ago with Carrie's brother and in-laws. We all went over for Christmas. We all wore pajamas.
Yeah, we all got, when my parents were living here, after Ian, when their house got messed up, we all bought the same matching ones, and it was a green shirt with a Lampoon's quote that was that there's an RV, and the matching pants to go with it. And then finally we wore those like 2 years in a row. So, two or three years in a row. And then this year we are doing a whole different one that she picked out and kind of came up with on her own. So that's what we will be doing. And we're, when we do our Christmas Day, will be once we do the wake up, our Christmas Day will be with her mother and their perspective families, her sister, us, and then her mother and her mother's boyfriend, will have different pajamas that we all do as separate little families.
Pajama Jimmy Jam. So
that's the tradition we're moving on to. So
if you get the kid and play house party reference, you're welcome. you reminded me when my aunt and my mom were in their mid-50s to 60s, the family tradition was homemade fudge. And so when we died in Kentucky, it was my aunt Wink did the peanut butter fudge, my mom did the chocolate fudge, and I think maybe Robin did like the turtle fudge, whatever. And we're talking about this is the fudge that they would charge you like $18 a pound over on Mat Lachey. Same stuff, high quality stuff.
Yeah.
And then for a while, my mom would actually make up a bunch and put it in a tin and slop it in the mail. And wow, sweet, get fudge in the mail. But the thing that I do. Which last year I experienced the recession version of this. I end up buying myself one of those three flavored Christmas tin of the popcorn every year. I've been getting these tins. They started out as gifts from Aunt Donna. We'd go there and they'd give you, here's your presents and a tin of popcorn. Sweet. You know, I had one, my brother had one. We all have big tins of popcorn and trash can of popcorn in our bedrooms.
The caramel one always went first.
Caramel went first, cheddar cheese second, and then the plain or the white cheddar second if it was in there, depending on what year you got one from. Because back in the day, your options were cheddar, salted, or cheddar, butter, and caramel. Caramel corn's always the first one to go. Well, you know how they come with the cardboard triangle separator in there? Last year, because of the recession and shrinkflation, cardboard dividers, the popcorn was basically in potato chip bags. So you weren't actually getting the full circumference and depth of that drum. You were getting that same size drum with three individual, essentially miniature packs of airtight popcorn, where if you would have poured it in there, it probably would have took up a quarter of the drum for the same price.
Right.
And I was so disappointed. I'm like, what is this? This is a scam. And you can't say it's for freshness because that's what the tin was for. They've been doing this for 50 years. The popcorn was always fresh enough with the tin with the plastic band around the top. You don't need to individually package these things. But I guess probably is a little more sanitary than some guy working in some warehouse somewhere sitting and pouring in the tins that they don't clean out that dust in.
Who cares?
But yeah.
It's not like we were keeling over back in the day.
did you hear about Steve? Passed out. Popcorn poisoning. Got a batch from India. It was their sanitation over there. They mixed the popcorn with their feet. Did you guys see those videos, those AI videos around Thanksgiving? And people are buying into them. Yeah. I saw one today. A guy was like over in.
Wasn't there a guy making like cranberries or something like that? He was mashing with his feet or something like that.
No, what they were doing that, but they were showing them like mixing the batter for the sugar cookies that they sell at Walmart. And like people are going to, oh, I ain't buying these. I'm like, well, I wonder how much the sugar cookie industry is going to take a hit this year because this AI video of people in India mixing this stuff with their hands and their feet. Yeah. It's just. And you can completely tell their AI videos. Yeah. I saw one today. It would look like a street vendor making street tacos with his feet and his ankles moving in unrealistic ways. It's like,
come on.
This isn't the poltergeist. It's like, come on. You know, this stuff's fake. So I do that. And then we have the Christmas story. Well, we used to, because TBS, you know, about 10 years ago, 15 years ago, TBS just got the license for Christmas Story. And starting from midnight until midnight, it's just on a never-ending loop. And so we would just turn on Christmas Story and just eat our popcorn and open presents. That was basically it. But, even last year, my popcorn tin was greatly disappointing. Let's do one more of these guys. Do that one. Let's go up to the top. This one is no surprise, but actually this one, obviously we could talk about Krampus and all that, but everybody knows about Krampus. There's nothing fun in that one. This one's kind of cool. The giant spider web came out of the Ukraine since the 1800s. The tradition comes from Ukraine's folktale about a poor widow whose spider webs turn into silver on Christmas morning. Spider webs called I'm not even going to try to pronounce it. Pofratarsky symbolized prosperity and blessing. The custom spread widely in the 19th century. And so now if you live in Ukraine, you would buy gold or silver fake but spider webs to put on your tree. You know, you wouldn't decorate the whole thing like it's Nightmare Before Christmas, but you'd buy one and kind of put it up there. And so that's a tradition from there.
Interesting.
I wonder if that's where tinsel came from.
Could be, you know, because we like to... We like shiny things and we like to rip stuff off. You know, oh. So I learned this from American Pickers. In the 1950s, you could buy fake snow from your house.
From your house?
Or your inside your house.
Asbestos?
Yes, you could buy asbestos snowflakes to put on your tree in the 1940s and 50s. Oh. I'm looking at it right here, right now.
The more you know.
You know what this is? You should know by the symbol.
Gas, 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 gas.
Okay.
This is the civilian gas mask that was issued in World War II, particularly to people in the United Kingdom and allied countries when they were worried about the Germans bombing them. I can't put this on. You know what this filter is made out of?
Asbestos.
Asbestos.
Oh my goodness.
This is called asbestos.
Well, they thought that stuff was good for everything, huh?
Oh yeah, all that.
When I was in basic, they came around and took all of our mess kits away because they were all World War II issue, and they were aluminum, and you know, of course. You know, soaking your food, you know, nice hot, you know, aluminum boil. Yeah.
I still
not real good for the. Yeah. Yeah. I mean, I don't know what they did with them, but boy, they came around one day and took our old World War II ones and gave us probably Vietnam ones, I guess.
That's interesting. I'll have to ask the fellas about that because when we do these events, we all have. I have one from 19, I think my earliest one is a 1939. I took them camping when we went the first time. I have four or five mess kits. Mm-hmm. And you know, people, oh, I'm so strong. I used to drink hose water. It's like, dude, I drank out of an 80-year-old canteen last week that I've had for 12 years. I've never washed. Save me your garden hose speech. So, but I've never heard anybody say that about the aluminum. That's interesting.
Yeah,
of course, it could have been some marketing gimmick that the guy who provided the army with the plastic canteens and the new mess kits came up with. You know, those old World War II ones, they're aluminum. They're going to give you silver lung. You need to issue your boys these plastic ones.
We had our canteens in training were left over from Morgan's era because they still had the stupid drinking tube that was on your gas mask that never worked.
Oh,
it was always missing.
Yeah. I'd forgotten about that.
You'd have to pop the top on that lid and then stick the tube in your mouth inside the mask, and it never worked.
Yeah, we actually, one day, I can't remember what we did, but we were out in the middle of August, and it must have been 110, and mop level 4, like mopping the parking lot or something ridiculous like that. But you know, you put on that jumpsuit with the mask with the hood. Oh gosh, that was miserable.
Yeah.
On that note, that's going to wrap up this episode, the Christmas episode, the 2025 episode of the What's in Your Head podcast. Thank you guys so much for hanging out with us for all these years, and we're looking for 2026. Hopefully, things will be a little bit better. But if you saw the head of security for the United Kingdom tell their people that they need to be getting prepared, man, woman, and child. I don't know if you guys heard about this. Not a joke.
I saw that video. UK
to prepare for World War III with Russia. And I know the German military is trying to get up to speed by 2027. Things are looking not too good. But with that being said, hopefully 2026 will turn around for everybody and things will pick up. We want to thank each and every one of you. And if you haven't done so, head over to youtube.com and look up the What's in Your Head YouTube page. Like, subscribe. Hopefully you'll see some more of our videos. And head over to whatsinyourhead.com. Click on those merch links. Help us out. Buy some fishing gear, some holsters, and all that good stuff. And until next year, guys, thanks for hanging out. We'll talk to you all later. There was something I was going to say on, I said I wouldn't say it on the air, but I forgot what it was. Ooh. But yeah. Yeah.
I think that's long, literally the longest I've gone without saying fuck in about a year.
I slept out.
I opened up a Google Word or whatever. I put in big bold letters underlined, no cussing, no politics.
Well, I can edit some of it out for the version.
I wrote it down at first, but I was like, I don't know where I can put this.
So I got to tell you real quick. Our cigarette conversation.
Yeah.
So I remember when I was 15 and I told my dad that I had started smoking. And he's like, oh, I'll cure your ass real quick. Hands me a Pall Mall straight. And I'll tell you, no hit of weed I ever took got me as high as smoking that Pall Mall straight. It was just like pure nicotine into my, you know, Marlboro Light smoking system. Oh my gosh.
Yeah,
I think I mentioned her on the show before. When I worked at Wendy's in high school, we had an 8-year-old woman. I forget her name. She would sweep the room with the
little, yeah,
the broom that didn't make any, the vacuum that made no noise. And she smoked. She was a Pall Mall non-filter smoker at the age of 82.
Ooh.
I think that's what kept her going.
I think I was so used to, you know, just.
This has been a Digital 410 production.